Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm thrilled to have you with me today. This is Superwoman Wednesday. Three amazing women writers are with me. But first, I want to just tell you about some new book releases that have come out for all of you who love to read, and I hope all of you do. The first one I want to tell you about is a book by one of the other hosts in the network. His name is Nick Kolakowski. He is the host for Noir on the Radio. His book has just released. It is an amazing book. I hope that you have a chance to go and pick it up and read it. Also, Sean Black's book, The Deep Lonely, is on the block now. It is a novella from Ty Johnson that is one of his was a secondary character, as a matter of fact, and is now turned into a major character. Everybody likes him so much. I also want to remind you that we have a book review page on Facebook called Book Review Crew to get all the latest information. Please, by all means, go there and see what else is out. New books today, Presiding Over the Dam by Liam Sweeney. I've read the book. It's magnificent. Dina Santarelli has Baby Carter releasing. Carla Neggers, who will be my guest in the second hour. Imposters, Laura's out. Shimmy Bang Sparkle, which is an amazing book by Nicola Rendell. I read it. It's fun. It's a caper. Swift Vengeance by T. Jefferson Parker has just released today. And William Kent Kruger's Desolation Mountain also released. I hope that you all have a chance to pick up the book. Today, my guest is a magnificent debut novelist. I had the honor and privilege of meeting her at Thriller Fest this year. Peng Shepard's first book called The Story of M is a dystopian novel about memories. It's a very, very interesting story. I'm here to welcome Peng Shepard to the show. Hi, Peng. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Congratulations on the success of your first novel. It has just won rave reviews, except for somebody that called it a turkey. And we're just kind of laughing about that in the green room. I thought that was hysterical. Who uses that word when you're talking about a book? You know, I don't get that.
But it was just so funny.
It's cute.
I mean, can't be mad about it because it is cute. Yeah. So I kind of like that. That's my favorite one-star review so far.
you got to have the turkey one-star review just to keep you humble, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about you. I know that you ride horses. I know that you studied classic ballet. Were you a professional ballerina? Is that why you traveled so much?
No. Well, you know, I almost was. I started dancing when I was, I don't even know. I mean, you know, when you're like two or three, you're barely walking.
Sure.
Your mom puts you in the little cute pink. Yeah. And I had loved it my whole childhood and adolescence. But I got to the point in high school where I think a lot of dancers face this point where you have to decide if you're going to try to go professional or you're going to go to college. And my mom was like, I know you love this, but you got to go to college, you know. And I agree. I think that was the right choice. I'm really grateful to her for, kind of pushing me in the, being supportive, but pushing me in the right direction for me. So that is the point at which I stopped dancing very, very seriously, but I still love it. And I still try to do it when I can.
For all those who've not looked at Peng's picture, she's absolutely drop dead gorgeous. She would have been definitely the prima ballerina in a troupe. Gorgeous and lovely and wonderful and has a great smile and a great laugh. What did you study in college?
I got a bachelor's of arts in Chinese language and literature, and then I went on and I got a master's in international studies and diplomacy, which is nothing like ballet or like writing. I went a really different, I think this is also true for a lot of writers too. You are a little bit afraid of what you love so much, and you think, especially because society tells you too, that you need like a quote unquote real job.
Right.
Or at least a day job to support you until your writing kind of takes off. And so that's how I ended up on that path. And it was really interesting and really fulfilling. And I ended up doing that for a couple of years, too.
You have a very traditional American last name, but Peng is obviously not an American first name. What is your ancestry?
Yep. So my mom's side of the family is from Taiwan. She was born over there, and she came to the U.S. when she was about like 4 or 5, I think. And then my dad's side of the family is, a European mix. I think we're mostly British, German, and Swedish, which is where the pepper comes from. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. What did you do with your college degree before you got your MFA?
Well, it sort of fed right into that master's in international studies and diplomacy that I had to do because when you get out of college with a bachelor's in Chinese language and literature, there is not a whole lot you can do with that.
It's an interesting major. What was your intention when you took that as your major? And by the way, was that a very big pool of students studying the same thing?
It was a pretty sizable, I went to Arizona State University, which is gigantic. It's just a huge university. I think when I was there, they had something like 80,000 enrolled students.
Wow.
So,
there
were definitely plenty of us studying Chinese language and literature. But I did it mostly because I wanted to, it was mostly just about improving my fluency. My Chinese was not super great when I was a kid, and the older I got, the more I felt like that
you
was
lose
really
it.
Important. To
sure.
Kind of, you do, yeah. You know, because I grew up in Arizona, and really for a long time, my Spanish was better than my Chinese, which was fun, but also made me feel like I really had a responsibility to kind of get back to my roots and get back to my heritage and like kind of make my grandma proud. So that is how I ended up taking that. Yeah, it was just really important to me, and I'm really glad I did it, even though it wasn't super employable.
Well, but you know, now you have a best-selling book. You're doing really well. Were you always a reader? It sounds to me like the arts are kind of entwined with who you are. If you studied dance, you loved music as well. So how did reading and writing come into your life?
They were also just really there from the beginning. I think I just loved reading for as long as I can remember. And my mom, she was also a really big part of that. She, no matter how busy she was, and she often worked pretty late into the evening, but she would always read my brother and I a bedtime story, like no matter how tired she was. And anytime we wanted a book, we got it somehow, whether it was a bookstore or a friend or, the library. And so I think that her taking my love of reading so seriously just kind of encouraged me even more to just read everything I could get my hands on and to really love that.
That's magnificent. That's, you're lucky that you had a parent who was interested in doing that for you. Oftentimes you don't have that. My mom encouraged my love of books too. So I get that. Did you know you always know you wanted to write?
I think I did, but it was the thing I was the most scared of because it's not really like dance. The dance is also, it's incredibly hard to succeed in that field too, and you have to put a lot of hours in and you're not sure, but it's a little bit more of a planned path, like if you end up at a good ballet school and you have a good instructor and you train really hard and then you can get into kind of like summer camps and then you can, there's set auditions for certain companies and you can look up all these companies. And so there's really more of a set path, but for writing, it's really just, you're just all on your own.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you really are. And I think that's really scary, especially when you're younger to try. It just feels really overwhelming. Like, how do you even write a book in the first place? But then what do you even do after that? And how do you find these magical people that are going to publish it? Yes, I always did want to write, but it was definitely the one that took the most courage to try to do.
I'm sure it did. You have to be a reader, though, to understand how a book is supposed to be written. At least initially, you have to be a reader. And you obviously were a reader, and that's good. My thought, though, is this is such an unusual book. It's dystopian in its tone. It's about memories, and the way that this unfolds in your book is very unusual because it starts with a man whose shadow disappears while he's in a market. And it is like it's plague-like, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Where did this story come from? Were you a dystopian or a futuristic book lover? Did you like that type of story? It's an unusual first book unless you've been reading the genre, I guess is where what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I definitely was reading in, a couple of books in the post-apocalyptic genre, but my favorite genres are science fiction and fantasy. And that's what I grew up reading. Yeah, it's what really, I mean, I read everything. I also read literary fiction and mysteries and thrillers and horror, but science fiction and fantasy are really my favorite genres and are really what gave me, I think, my love of reading. That might be why this book is kind of a mashup of all of those, you know, I think even if I tried to write something else, science fiction and fantasy would have found its way into the book,
right,
you know, in the form of shadows disappearing or things like that.
It's a marvelous story. Will you tell, first of all, I want to say that I have a copy of Peng's book. It's a hardcover. It is distributed through HarperCollins, one of the imprints, which is William Morrow. And I'm going to give away a copy. If you want to call in and say hello to Peng, first call in gets the book. The number is 347-633-9609. 347-633-9609. Peng, tell listeners a little bit about the story, please.
Sure. So the Book of M, like you said, it's kind of a post-apocalyptic dystopian, I think almost fantasy, and it's set in the near future, and it is about a mysterious phenomenon that is, it first causes that one person's shadow to disappear, but then very quickly starts to spread, and all around the world, people's shadows also start to disappear with kind of terrifying effects, because the people who lose their shadows gain almost magical abilities, but at the cost of one of their own memories every time they use that magic. And so that, you know, as everyone starts to figure out more and more who they are, the world is plunged into chaos. And the story follows a husband and wife, Ori and Max, who have survived this forgetting unscathed for about 2 years by hiding in an abandoned hotel on the top of a mountain, until at the very beginning of the book, Max's shadow also disappears, and they have to decide if they're going to keep hiding or if they're going to go out and confront what this world has become in the hope of saving her.
It's a really intriguing supposition, I have to tell you, and it's easy to suspend belief on this. It's lovely written. It's terrifying. It's I guess in every dystopian setting, you always have to be cognizant of the evil that comes out when people are at their weakest or when there's a big change. So it was really remarkable, and I have to say I thought it was great. So what is your follow up book? Have you started it?
I have, yes. It's so I am still thinking about maybe writing another book set in this world, maybe about 5 years later. We're currently discussing that, and I'm not sure if I'm going to do it or not. But in the meantime, I have started a second book. It's a standalone also, and I can't say much about it yet because it's still very early days, but it's going to have to do, I think, with maps.
How wonderful. How wonderful. Very exciting. When you went to Thriller Fest, was that your first big book conference?
It was my second conference ever. I went to the Nebulas a couple months before that, which is the science fiction and fantasy conference. And
absolutely.
But I think it's a lot smaller than Thriller Fest. And Thriller Fest
it is.
Was.
But every bit
so great,
is important.
Yeah. Yes. But Thriller Fest was really, I was a little bit nervous to be there because my book, some people are classifying it as a thriller, but it's really, because it kind of crosses a lot of genres, I was really nervous about being there or about finding anybody that might connect with it. But everybody I met was just so kind and excited and encouraging. And I got to meet so many authors. It was great.
Did you learn anything from your experience there?
At Thriller Fest?
At Thriller Fest, yeah. Is there something that as a writer you learned that you were not aware of or that really it was the one takeaway for you?
Well, I guess it might have been at how diverse the thriller genre is, because before I went, I was afraid that absolutely nobody would want to hear about my book at all, you know? And then when I got there, I got to see the whole range of books that were available and the types of authors that were there and the readers that were interested in reading all of these books, you know. And that was kind of fun, because I think we tend to think of the thriller genre in a really, really narrow way. And it's really not like that at all.
Well, and, yeah. And the thriller master writes in your genre. Who loves your genre?
He does.
The thriller master, George R.R. Martin. You can't get any bigger than that. And, he, you know, who would consider him a thriller writer, even though he doesn't necessarily consider himself, but his books are thrilling. There's no doubt about it. You know, they ratchet up your heartbeat. They have, I think, the same effect as any, like you would say, a classic thriller would. So I think you're in your element there. I know a lot of people were there specifically for George R.R. Martin, the Game of Thrones author. And are you interested in seeing this book made into a film?
I mean, I think that would be wonderful if anyone's interested. I definitely don't. I think maybe there are some writers that can kind of cross over onto the visual side, but I'm the kind of writer that can't see my book in that way. And so I think it would be really fun for me to see it done visually, because I'm very bad at conceptualizing that kind of thing. So that would be really, it'd be neat for me to see it kind of from another perspective that way.
What does your family think about your success and this book?
Oh, they have been, I mean, when I was writing it, first of all, and, you know, we had no idea if it was going to get published or not. They were just nothing but supportive, which meant a lot to me. You know, I think it's really hard to write your first book, because you're really just kind of doing it all alone. You don't have an agent yet. You don't have an editor, and you're just kind of toiling away in solitude. And they were so supportive then, and now they're just so proud. It's really the sweetest thing. I'm pretty sure my brother has convinced or forced everyone in his office to buy the book, which is just, you know, he's the best brother. He's the best brother. Yeah.
Is your brother creative also, by any chance?
He is, yeah. I don't know, maybe it's a family thing. We're all I think a little bit inclined that way. He does not have, his day job is not creative. He's a dispatcher for an airline, which is a very, to me, it seems like a very scientific and technical thing. Maybe he would say it's creative. But yeah, we have that streak. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. I think it's an inherited thing too. And, although I have one brother who doesn't like to read, I think he's picked up his first book like this past year to try to sit down and read. He'll slog through one book for the year. He says, I don't understand.
Well,
and
you know what he just needs? He needs the right book. That's what it is.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's mind boggling to me. I was thinking of something you said, you know, talking about a real job. My other brother says, I've been doing this for 7 years. I've done like 1,000 author interviews or something. And he says, well, when are you going to get a real job? And I keep saying, kind of have one, you know?
Yeah,
but you do this at home. And I said, yeah, but it's a real job, you know?
Yeah.
It's really funny. He says, but you talk to writers. Yeah. And I said, yeah, I know. It's the best job. You know?
It is the best. It's a real job.
Family is funny like that. You know, they're like, okay, yeah, sure, you're going to write a book. We'll support you. And yes, well, you know, it almost is like placating. And then, you know, you do well. You did well, and your family is very proud of you. Are they excited about you writing another book?
Oh, yes, they are. Yeah. My mom's already said she gets to read it first when it comes out.
Is she a critic, by the way? Does she read with an editor's eye?
A little bit. She manages to deliver any criticism in a very helpful and constructive way, which I appreciate a lot. But she's one of those readers who she pretty much does a whole book a day. She has a day job, and then she comes home and reads a whole book every evening. It's pretty amazing.
I love that. That's my life. Yeah. It's the best life there is. When you don't own it, I have no social life, so I read. I am a cliche, Peng. I'm a cliche. I have 5 cats, no TV, no social life, but I read 400 books a year. So there you go. You know, it's a trade off.
You know what? It sounds. It's what I aspire to be. So I admire
you a lot. You want to be a meme too? Okay. I'm putting in one last call for anybody who wants to say hello to Peng Shepherd and get her book is 347-633-9609. When your book was published, what was the feeling like when you first got the first copy, your advanced reader copy?
Oh, it was, it still almost didn't feel, especially with the advanced reader copy, it just kind of made it more scary because it felt like sometimes the closer you get to something that you want so badly, the more you think it's not going to work out somehow, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yes.
Like, of course, all of HarperCollins is not going to go out of business. Or, of course, you know what I mean? But I just kept thinking, like, something is going to happen. And I'm not, you know. So it was kind of terrifying to get the advanced reader copies.
Boy, how exciting for you, though, when that first box of books comes to your door. So
yes.
Usually about this time, I like to play Final Five with my guests, which is five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so when you're writing, must it be completely quiet, or do you like background noise?
I don't really mind the noise thing so much, but I prefer if there isn't another human being in the room, if that makes sense. So there can be noise from, like, you know, my cat or construction outside, but I need to be alone. So I can't do the coffee shop thing either.
Oh, okay. So are you a very disciplined writer? Do you go to your office, you know, your creative office, and work 9 to 5, or do you work to a word count or to a chapter? Do you do that every day?
I guess I am pretty disciplined. I do try to do it every day, and I try to hit anywhere between 1,000 and 2,000 words, and it usually takes till about after lunch. If it's a good day, if it's a bad day, it's much longer than that.
Do you read your dialogue out loud?
Upon revision, I definitely do. It's such a good, that was such a good tip. Whoever once told that to me, thank you so much.
It's interesting, as a follow-up to that, how when you read something you've written and then you say it out loud, how awkward it oftentimes sounds. And aren't you glad that you do that? You know, it sounds like stilted almost. So good on you for doing that. Favorite kind of music?
Ooh, well, when I'm writing, actually what I tend to do most is I take instrumental video game soundtracks and use them, because oftentimes they're like very natural sound, like it's nature outside and it's kind of quiet and meandering. So yeah, I just have a lot of video game soundtracks.
That's really interesting. Are you a gamer by chance?
I am, yeah.
It seems reasonable to assume that. My last question is, when someone asks you what you do for a living, what do you tell them?
Oh, I remember this moment when I finally switched over from saying whatever I was saying before to writer. Yeah, I do say writer now.
You don't say author.
It's really nice.
Oh, why don't you say
to me, the words are kind of interchangeable. I have some friends that are more picky, but I just say, I don't know, something about author.
Sounds too highfalutin.
I feel like, or it's like whenever I say it, the person is like, wait, what? Because they're kind of... I think they're expecting the word writer, and then they say, oh, what do you write? And I say books, and we go from there. But whenever I say author, I think it confuses people for some reason. Maybe if you're not in the writing field, it's not the word you're expecting, and so they don't really know what it means, like author of.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, so I just tend to say writer.
Good for you. Peng Shepherd, I think you're terrific. Where can people find you on the webs, please?
My website is just pengshepherd.com, and I'm also on Twitter, and it's just my name again.
I wish you so much success with your writing, and I hope that you'll come back again when your next book is published.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and I would absolutely love to come back. Thank you.
And good luck. Best of everything to you. I hope that you sell the film rights, and I hope that you continue to write magnificent stories. Thank you for being with me today.
No, thank you so much.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye, Feng.
Okay. Bye.
And that's our show for right now. I'll be back at 5 o'clock with Carla Neggers and Imposter's Lure. Thanks for being with me. And thank you, Mom and Dad.